This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and vision impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition due with you on Saturday, May the 6th.
This week, sunrise will be at 4:45, sunset at 9:30. On Tuesday, it will reach 17 degrees centigrade and it will be quite breezy.
Yes, we're into June already. And not flaming June as yet. Those scorching temperatures are behind us for the moment, and in fact it's a bit chilly at the moment. Well, let's have a listen now to the events and activities coming up at SVI next week.
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here are the upcoming activities taking place next week. Monday, 8th of June. Effective Campaigning Workshop, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12:30pm. We're really pleased to welcome Sarah Gayton and Sarah Leadbetter from the Federation of the Blind. They're both experienced campaigners with a great track record of making a real difference, including their work to stop ticket office closures at train stations. They've also done brilliant work raising awareness of issues affecting blind and visually impaired people, such as pavement parking, street obstructions, shared spaces, and the rise of e-scooters and cycles. They want to help us to save our service and will be sharing their knowledge to help us come together and strengthen our campaign against the proposed council funding cuts. Please book early, as spaces are limited. Let's talk about IT. West Bromwich Town Hall, 12:30 to 2:30pm. Come along and join us for an informal session where we'll chat about all things IT, whether you're a tech expert or just getting started. Everyone is welcome. Barry Lane from Beacon will be with us for the next few sessions to share his knowledge. Contact the SVI office to book your place. Tuesday, 9th June. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone, and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club, 1 to 2:30pm. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Showdown. Portway Lifestyle. Centre 2 to 4pm. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players, but the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Wednesday, 10th June. SVI Rocks, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10 to 12 noon. Join Rodrigo and Sarah Ann for our popular SVI Rock session. Sing or bring along an instrument and make some noise with us. Boost your musical skills and confidence. SVI Rock sessions will also be on 24th June and 8th July, leading up to a performance at SVY's Open Meeting on Monday, 13th July. Aquafit, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2pm. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone, with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Thursday, 11th of June. Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? Dartmouth Park Walk, 12 noon. Summer is definitely here when the park walks come back. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please let us know that you are coming, so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. It is important that you contact the office, either by phone, message, Facebook, or email, to let us know that you're attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team. Sandwell Visually Impaired. West Bromwich Town Hall. B708AY. Phone 0121 525 4810. Website www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Some headlines from the week's readings from The Express and Star. Wednesday, the 27th of May. How safari animals cool off in the heat. A 420-place school to be built on golf course. When Aled Jones felt trendy at school. Aftermath of factory blaze. Metallica urge fans to give blood. Thursday, fraud awareness sessions, knife crime drops, new leader and cabinet for Sandwell Council. Source of annoying alarm sound revealed. Villa price hike. Got the hump over speed humps. Friday. Freezer issue leaves shoppers with less choice. Rubbish piling up outside closed chip shop. Reform mayor proposal is break with tradition. Author checks into school to talk about dementia awareness. Saturday. Tom Watson takes break after cancer diagnosis. Black Country Day anthem. Mossa should have got Albion job sooner. New leader at Sandwell Council. Rich Indian flavours to choose from in Wensbury. Monday, best pubs in the Black Country. Anger over litter left in park in heatwave. Iconic Pies Factory spicy challenge. School workers pushed to the edge. Strike action looms. Sandwell Council leader says we will deliver on election pledges. West Brom Tuesday. Building society. One of best places to work. Call to review care rejections. Smeavik regeneration proposed on historic site. Two more teens charged with attempted murder.
Those stories and more coming up from the Express and Star with their kind permission. We have, as usual, the TV listings from Talking News Federation and radio programmes as well for the week ahead. And there's an interesting article from them too about the career of the presenter and broadcaster Jenny Murray, which is an interesting one. And I might well be able to squeeze in another visit to the Fixed Wheel Brewery, which we went around a month or so ago. But now the first day's news from the papers.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 27th of March. Safari park animals cool off with frozen treats as UK bakes in heat. This story is brought to you by Kirsty Louise Card. Supporting this article are a number of pictures of animals. The first is Lalo, the ring-tailed lemur, who's enjoying an ice treat in the hot weather. Lalo is mainly grey, with darker paws. She has a long tail, which is white and black. She also has golden eyes. There is a picture of an elephant with a couple of plants in front of it for food. There is also a penguin, which is a black and white bird with flippers, and it's trying to eat an ice cube on a piece of string. Adorable pictures released by West Midlands Safari Park have captured animals cooling off with frozen treats as temperatures soar across the UK. The UK experienced the hottest day ever recorded in May on Bank Holiday Monday, with temperatures reaching as high as 33 centigrade in some places. But whilst humans are struggling with the heat, it seems animals are also in search of ways to cool off. That's why keepers at West Midlands Safari Park have offered their beloved animals some relief in the form of frozen treats. Images shared online showed parrots enjoying their lollies containing fruits and rhinos licking large ice cubes with carrots inside. A spokesperson for Bewdley Attraction joked in a message online, "Ice, ice, baby. The animals have been beating the heat in the best way possible, with giant ice lollies packed full of their favourite treats. From frozen fruits, snacks to ice-cold enrichment is all part of helping the animals stay comfortable and entertained during the warm weather. And the keepers have been asking if there's one for us too. It's been a bumper half term at the attraction. Upcoming events at the Safari Park include the Giraffe Jamboree until May the 31st and Jurassic June throughout next month. For more details and further information, please visit www.wmsp.co.uk. 420 Pupil School for Golf Course. This story is brought to you by Mark Andrews. A plan to build a 420 pupil primary school on a former Black Country golf course has been lodged, costing £20 million. Full planning permission is being sought to build the new primary school on the former Brandall golf course in Oldbury. It will replace the 70-year-old Causeway Green Primary School in Penn Cricket Lane, with Education Chief says it's in worse condition than any other council-run school in the local authority. The building will also include a 26-place nursery school. The council-run golf course closed in 2019 due to falling numbers. But initial plans to build 550 new homes on the site sparked an immediate backlash, with almost 3,000 people signing a petition to retain the site as a green space. Scale-back proposals for 190 homes, a school and a public park on the site was approved in principle in 2023. In January this year, the previous Labour administration had also approved in principle relocating the existing school to the golf course site, but any such development would be subject to full planning permission. New detailed designs for the school will now go before planners under the plans for under 6.5 acres of the former golf centre will be developed, including a new sports playing field. An L-shaped building is proposed for the site, featuring 12 classrooms, a canteen and an assembly hall, along with library and offices. A joint statement issued on behalf of the Sandal Council and the Tilbury Douglas Construction said the existing school is in very poor state of repair and its site experiencing significant recurring flooding issues. It is cost prohibitive to deliver a new school on the existing site. Ali Jones reveals the one time he felt trendy at school. This story is brought to you by Laura Harding. Supporting this article is a title that says Ali Jones, age 14, jumping for joy after collecting a silver disc for Voices from the Holy Land. The picture shows a boy in a white shirt and a black tie and grey trousers jumping for joy whilst holding a gold disc in a frame, standing in the middle of a road. Ali Jones recalled the only time in school when he felt trendy, when he was parodied on Spitting Image. The Welsh singer rocketed to fame as a teenager chorister when his recording of Walking in the Air featuring in the animation of The Snowman in 1985. He told the Press Association, "I was very lucky as a kid to have 3 mad 4 years when I released 16 albums, travelled the world, sang everywhere from the Hollywood Bowl to the Vatican. I was only ever trendy at school once, and that was when I was on Spitting Image, the satire show on a Sunday night, and they had a little doll made up of me who was unfortunately had curly hair and a South Walian accent, but we don't go into that. But they basically had me recording 32 albums in 10 minutes, and I was a bit like that when I was a child, but it meant that I was introduced to so many fantastic pieces of music." Jones is now a regular presence on TV and radio, and will soon be recording Alexander Armstrong on Classic FM's flagship weekend show, which airs on Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Armstrong, who had hosted the show for the past 6 years, will present a new Friday evening programme, whilst Dawna Porter will join the station to host her own Saturday show. Jones said, "Being able to share my passion with the listeners every day of the week is going to be fantastic. I'm always somebody who tries to present classical music in a popular way. I remember singing my first record deal when I was a kid to Virgin Records and Richard Branson saying, 'I haven't got a clue how we're going to sell this record or the music you do, so we're just going to have to sell it like we do, a Boy George or a Genesis album, and that's how I present Classic FM.' When I was a child, there was no difference for me listening to either Handel or Rachmaninoff or Queen or Spandau Ballet. A kid of the 80s, so it was all great music. And so the way I always present classical music has been in my very own open way because it's brilliant. He said he believes classical music is now more accessible than he was when he was a child, and young people are more likely to treat it like other genres. He said, I remember when I used to be younger, going into a record store and the classical department would be on the third floor behind glass, as if it was some sort of dangerous animal, and to go in there at your peril, but not at all now. My kids, for instance, have their everything on their MP3 players, from the classical big hits like Beethoven and Tchaikovsky, but also rap and stuff like that as well. I think these days people like good music and that's it. Jones paid tribute to his radio dad, Terry Wogan, who was a dear friend, and he said he learned a great deal from the broadcasting veteran who died in 2016. He said he was amazing. I had the dubious honour of going on the Wogan show more than any other guest. Image shows aftermath of factory unit blaze. This story is brought to you by Daniel Walton. Supporting this article is a picture with the title The Aftermath of the Fire at Rood's End Industrial Estate, Oldbury, which happened last week. The picture shows an industrial site with all of the windows burnt out and fire damage to the inside of the building. A new image shows the aftermath of a devastating blaze that ripped through a factory unit in Oldbury. The fire took hold of the Total Plastics property on Rood End Road Industrial Estate in the early hours of May the 23rd, with 50 firefighters tackling the blaze. Now the Express and Star has returned to the scene days later to see the ruined building following the fire. Its windows are shattered, with its walls seen to be charred and fire damaged. At the time of the fire, 85% of the building was already consumed in flames by the time crews arrived, with fire officers also having to tackle the challenging weather conditions. Crews from Smethwick, West Bromwich and Handsworth were amongst the first on the scene. However, the response soon increased with more than 50 firefighters, 11 fire engines and 6 supporting vehicles attending the blaze at its height. Whilst tackling the blaze, Sandwell Council issued a statement identifying that the building may have had an asbestos cement roof and that they will be assessing the situation and arranging for a decontamination of the area. As of yet, no update has been given on the cause of the blaze. Metallica urge fans over blood. Metallica has urged fans in Britain to give blood as they approach the start of the UK leg of their world tour. In a first ever collaboration between the UK Blood Services and a global band, the metal veterans have called on their followers to donate blood and plasma around the upcoming tour dates. The Welsh Blood Service, England's NHS Blood and Transplant, that's the NHSBT, and the Scottish National Blood Transfusion Service are working with the American band to encourage existing donors to return and new donors to come forward. UK Blood Services said that the need for blood is constant and it has a shelf life of only 35 days. Donors may play an important role in aiding a treatment of trauma victims, cancer patients, new mothers and living with long-term conditions such as sickle cell disease, UK Blood Services said.
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from the Express and Star from the 28th of May. Fraud awareness sessions help local residents stay safe from scammers. West Brom Building Society is marking a year of hosting fraud and scam awareness sessions in the local community, aimed at helping people protect themselves from fraudsters and feel more confident spotting potential scams. The first session was delivered last May at Wolverhampton College. Since then, the West Brom has run over 48 sessions, reaching over 680 people through its branch community spaces and local venues, including libraries, community centres and other local groups. The events are open to everyone and are shaped around local needs, including reaching communities where English may not be their first language. Reflecting the diversity of the areas the West Brom serves, some sessions have been delivered in other languages such as Punjabi and Urdu. Punjabi language sessions held over the past year have included events with Handsworth Park Community Group's over 50s members, alongside a women's yoga and gym session and a positive wellbeing group. The workshops help ensure important information reaches people who may otherwise feel unsure about where to turn for trusted advice. Feedback from attendees and community partners has underlined just how important the work is, particularly as scams continue to grow in both number and sophistication. Following the success of the programme, all branch staff are now trained to deliver the fraud and scam awareness sessions. Mel Bradburn, Senior Branch Manager in Wolverhampton, said, "We are proud of the difference these sessions have made over the past year. With scams becoming more common and more convincing, it is vital that people have access to clear, trusted advice to help keep themselves safe." Knife crime in region drops by more than 1,000 offences. Police and Crime Commissioner welcomes fall but says more work needs to be done. By Gurdip Tandy. Knife crime in the West Midlands has dropped by more than 1,000 offences in the past 2 years. Figures presented to the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner's PCC Accountability and Governance Board showed knife crime offences have dropped by 25.1% from 5,268 offences to 3,946 in the year ending March 2026. PCC Simon Foster welcomed the drop but warned more work needed to be done to tackle issues. The meeting also heard proactive policing has continued to increase with the number of weapons recovered through stop and search rising significantly. In the year ending March 2026, West Midlands Police recorded 1,035 stop and searches that resulted in the recovery of a knife, representing a 16.4% increase compared to the baseline year. The figures also show serious youth violence continues to decline across the West Midlands. In the year ending March 2026, offences fell by 14.9%, reflecting the impact of ongoing partnership work to prevent young people from becoming involved in violence and exploitation. Mr. Foster said, "These figures represent significant progress in our aim to prevent and tackle knife crime and serious youth violence. Every violent offence prevented, every knife removed from our streets, and every young person diverted away from crime helps make our communities safer. A 25.1% reduction in knife crime is a significant achievement and represents the impact of investment, partnership working and proactive policing that we have prioritised through my police and crime plan. The increase in weapons recovered through stop and search shows that officers are continuing to take dangerous knives off our streets and prevent potential harm." This is an article from the Sandwell Council website. New leader and cabinet for Sandwell Council. Councillor Ray Nock has been formally confirmed as the new leader of the council at Sandwell's annual meeting. Leader of the council, Councillor Ray Nock, said, "I was born in Sandwell and have lived and worked here all my life, so it's an honour and a privilege to be elected the new leader of Sandwell Council. There is a lot to be proud of in Sandwell, and alongside my new cabinet, we're totally committed to making our borough an even better place to live and work. We're going to be working hard for all our residents and to bring our community together. We will be focused on the issues that matter to people in Sandwell, creating jobs, boosting our town centres and high streets, and helping with the cost of living." The meeting, which was held yesterday, 26th May, also saw Councillor Gary Dale appointed as the Council's deputy leader. Councillor Nock has also selected the Council's new cabinet, which was responsible for setting the strategic and policy direction of the Council. Councillor Ray Nock, leader of the Council and cabinet member for regeneration and economic growth. Councillor Gary Dale, statutory deputy leader and cabinet member for finance and corporate services. Councillor Ken Parsons, deputy leader and cabinet member for housing. Councillor Bob Jones, cabinet member for environment and enforcement. Councillor Mona Kurana, cabinet member for children and families. Councillor Jack Sabarwal, cabinet member for education and skills. Councillor Richie Massey, cabinet member for adult services, health and wellbeing. Councillor Mike Cooper, cabinet member for customer services and neighbourhoods. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of 8 people standing on some steps. 7 of the people are men in suits and the other is a woman. The other colour photograph shows Councillor Nock standing in front of Sandwell Council House. Source of alarm that drove residents insane is revealed. Council say the environmental health team will undertake a follow-up visit. By Isabella Bonham. A constant alarm drove residents in areas of the Black Country insane over the late May bank holiday weekend, and now the source has been revealed. residents in West Bromwich, Wednesbury and Tipton took to social media over the late May bank holiday weekend to complain of an alarm sound that was constant across a number of days. The alarm began sounding on Friday, May the 22nd, and Sandwell Council told the Express and Star it stopped on the bank holiday Monday, May the 25th. The sound was heard in towns across Sandwell. One resident in Wednesbury posted on Facebook on Sunday, "Driving me mad in Wednesbury. Feel sorry if you're living close to it. I wonder if anyone is finding out what it is." Residents in West Bromwich also posted on the social media platform on Sunday, one saying, "It's driving me insane." At the time, it was unclear to residents where the alarm sound was coming from. Sandwell Council has confirmed to the Express and Star that the alarm sound was from the Constantine Energy Storage in Golds Hill. It is located in Ocker Hill, a residential area straddling the border of Tipton and Wednesbury, just off the Black Country New Road. A spokesperson for Sandwell Council commented, "Loud alarms are very frustrating for residents, especially over a hot bank holiday weekend. Our environmental health team will undertake a follow-up visit to remind the factory in question of their responsibilities. We take this opportunity to remind all business owners that they have appropriate out-of-hours arrangements and contact numbers displayed at their premises in case of incidents such as this or other emergency situations. The Express and Star has attempted to contact the factory." Almost £1,000 for top tickets after Villa price hike. Villa have hiked ticket prices for the fifth straight year, with the most expensive adult season ticket now costing almost £1,000. A 5% increase will apply to all season tickets and single match tickets, while supporters will be charged up to £99 to attend Champions League fixtures. The hike will see the cost of adult season tickets in the most expensive pricing zones of Villa Park rise to £997.50, with the cheapest now £703. Adult supporters without season tickets will pay a minimum of £61 to attend top category Premier League fixtures, with the cheapest adult ticket for lower category matches just under £50. Villa's success on the pitch under Unai Emery has run alongside frustration of it from supporters at continued cost increases, with previous pleas from fan groups for a freeze on prices ignored. The club have argued the rises are needed to boost revenues and help the club comply with the Premier League and UEFA's fair play rules. Emery's team, who are returning to the Champions League for the second time in three seasons, will play in front of a reduced capacity of around 36,000 next term due to the development of the North Stand. As part of the announcement, the club has guaranteed a freeze on match ticket prices for the 2027-28 campaign, when the stadium's capacity will be increased to more than 50,000. We've got the hump over road. Speed bumps are laid down, but dozens of potholes remain unfilled. By Mimi Ibrahim. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a man standing in the middle of a road next to a brand new speed hump. The road surface looks a bit scraggy. Tony Farmer says the speed humps have limited impact while problem potholes on the roads are untouched. Residents are furious that workmen have spent hours creating speed humps in their road while potholes have been left untouched. The speed calming measure on Booth's Lane in Great Barr were laid down recently by crews armed with lorries filled with asphalt. People living and working in the street say they would have been better off using the materials to fill the potholes that have become an ongoing headache for motorists. Tony Farmer of Tony Scissors Hair Studio, who is the oldest trader on the road, said he was not the biggest fan of the speed bumps. He said the potholes had been left and the speed bumps hadn't even slowed down cars on the road. He said, "I haven't seen them slow down. I think it's a waste of money and we pay for it. We're the taxpayer. The council is supposed to have no money. We're paying for this and it isn't doing the job." The new speed humps have created an online debate, with Annabelle Wall-Smith writing, "Wish they'd fix the potholes before putting in speed bumps." And Nigel Jarvis wrote, "It's a joke. Repair the road first, then put in the speed bumps. No wonder the city's in trouble." The traffic calming measures on Booth Lane were installed by Birmingham City Council at a consultation that began in late 2025. And many local people welcomed the measures, with some saying they need to be bigger in order to be more effective. A Birmingham City Council spokesperson said the condition of the road would be monitored, adding, "We assess all highway network defects using a defined risk matrix to ensure a consistent and appropriate proportionate response to repairs. Like many highway authorities, we have experienced a significant increase in both reactive repairs and planned maintenance activity across the network since the start of 2026. The newly installed traffic calming features referenced are part of a separate scheme currently being developed and delivered outside of routine highway maintenance activities. Our teams are working at pace to prioritise and address defects based on safety risk and network condition, alongside an extensive programme of ongoing work schedule."
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 29th of May. Freezer issues leave shoppers with little choice. A West Bromwich supermarket has been left with a limitation on what frozen products it can sell after a technical issues with freezers and fridges. Freezers and fridges inside the Tesco Extra store in West Bromwich were left empty yesterday morning after the issue was reported, with a limited number of products such as milk and frozen pizzas available, but other items like vegetables and meats unavailable. Signs were left inside freezers to inform customers that they were out of order and to ask staff for assistance. Shoppers heading out of the supermarket, which is located next to the New Square shopping centre, said they were disappointed at the lack of selection, but understood that Tesco were working to get the problem fixed. Barry and Patricia Miles had come to do their weekly shop and said they understood what had happened. Barry said, "It's one of those things, isn't it? We'd heard about it the other day and decided to come down to see if it was working or not. It's frustrating, but not much we can do." Patricia said, "We've come to do our big shop and we'll have to shop somewhere else as that's going to be easier, but I know they're doing their best." It's disgusting. Rubbish is piling up by closed chip shop. Written by Isabella Bonham. There is anger in the community as huge amounts of rubbish have been left out the back of a closed down fish and chip shop in Wensbury near people's homes. Bobby's Fish and Chip Shop, located on Coronation Road in Wensbury, has been blighted at the back of its premises, with litter and rubbish. The fish and chip shop has reportedly been closed down for years and nothing has been done to move the rubbish that is collecting out the back. The closed down chip shop is located next to a Best One convenience store, and flats are also located above the shop. Owner of the Best One store, Hardip Brandois, told the Express and Star, "We took over in April 2025 and the rubbish next door has been in there since then. Nobody has come to clear it up. Some people moan about it, but nothing happens. People who live in the flats above have said they have seen rats. We are eager to see it all gone." One resident complained about the rubbish on a local Facebook group on Sunday. She wrote, "No one is doing anything about it, not even the council." Apparently the chippy has been closed for years. I moved here in March and it's absolutely disgusting. A spokesperson for Sandor Council said Sandor Council has invested in bringing an end to criminal fly tipping in our borough. The site in question is on private land but is clearly a public nuisance and we will act where the owner has failed to do so. We will also be following this up with enforcement which could lead to a fine. The council has installed new CCTV cameras at known fly-tipping hotspots and increased enforcement efforts. Since October 2025, enforcement action has resulted in fixed penalty notices for fly-tipping, with fines reaching up to £1,000 for those who hand waste to unlicensed removal firearms. We also need private landowners to take their responsibilities seriously and to be good neighbours. We will prosecute offenders. Alongside this article is a picture of the rubbish. It is in a back brick walled off kind of square space. There are black rubbish bags filled with rubbish, empty beer cans, empty cider cans, big sheets of paper and lots of moss and weeds. It's captioned, "The rubbish outside the closed down Bobby's Fish and Chip Shop." Author checks in at school to help raise dementia awareness. A detective story is helping students learn more about dementia and careers in social care, thanks to a unique initiative. Nearly one in three young people know someone living with dementia, yet many children witness changes in a loved one without the language or understanding to process what is happening and talk openly about it. England's largest non-for-profit provider of older people's care and housing, Anchor, is working to help change that. Mario Ambrosi, author and Anchor's Director of Communications and Marketing, brought his book, Scarlet Buckling and the Case of the Missing Pictures, to Shireland Biomedical UTC in West Bromwich. The visit gave students from years 7 and 8 the chance to explore dementia in an accessible and age-appropriate way, and to hear more about careers in social care. Published by Tiny Tree, the book tells the story of 12-year-old Scarlett, who finds herself in the middle of a mystery when her gran begins to lose her memory and goes missing. The impact of the book is already being felt. In a survey of children who had read it, 57% said they had never previously considered a career in care, but after reading Scarlet Buckling and the Case of the Missing Pictures, half said they would like to pursue a career in care, with the other half now open to the idea. Miss Griffiths, teacher at Shireland Biomedical UTC, said, "We are always looking for meaningful ways to bring important topics to life for our students, and this visit did exactly that. Dementia is something many of our young people will encounter in their own lives, and having the chance to explore it through storytelling and then hear directly from people working in the care sector made for a really impactful day. It has sparked some brilliant conversations across the school." Along this article is a picture of four members of staff. It is Mario Ambrosi and some members of staff from the Shireland Academy. They are stood in what seems to be a reception with behind them some pop-ups of Shireland Academy advertisement. There are two women in the centre of the frame, both wearing black blazers, black trousers and purple shirts. One man on the left of the frame wearing brown trousers, a grey blazer and red shirt, and one on the right wearing a full grey suit. They are all have their hands together and are smiling at the camera. It's captioned, "Mario Ambrosi with colleagues from Anchor and Principal Gulfam Shazam." Reform Mayor proposal is break with tradition. Mayor's role meant to be above party politics, says Labour. Written by Christian Barnett, local democracy reporter. The appointment of a new mayor in Sandwell has prompted Labour to accuse Reform of breaking with tradition. Reform councillor Margaret Sutton was elected the new mayor of Sandwell in the first official act of the new Reform-led Sandwell Council on Tuesday night. Labour, now the opposition party in Sandwell after losing control of the borough for the first time since 1979, accused Reform of breaking from tradition and nominating its own mayor instead of rewarding the council's longest-serving councillor with the civic role. Labour leader Paul Moore said that Councillor Elaine Giles, who last year served as Deputy Mayor, should be granted the title of Sandwell's first citizen based on her 20-plus year experience as a councillor. However, Reform nominated Councillor Sutton, who was elected in the Great Bard, Tenbridge and Yewtree ward earlier this month, to serve as Mayor for the coming 12 months. The support of Reform councillors, who swept into power with 41 seats following elections on May 7th, was enough to confirm the appointment, and the vote saw 37 councillors in support and 28 voting against, with one abstention. Mr Moore said the move was a very poor start from Reform, and Sandwell deserved better. He said at the meeting, "The mayoralty is meant to be above party politics. It's meant to unite this borough and not reflect the political priorities of whatever group holds the most seats at a given moment. And by breaking from this convention, Reform UK risks turning a respected office into a political appointment." Claire Tuley-Zeffi, the newly elected Reform councillor in the Langley ward, said Sandwell had voted for change and this is what they were giving them. The move has angered other Labour councillors, with Councillor Luke John Davies accusing Reform of wasting taxpayers' money to seek legal advice over Councillor Sutton's appointment and weaseling their way around the rules. "I hope it's not a sign of things to come," he said at the meeting. Accepting the role as Sandwell's first citizen, Claire Sutton advised new and returning councillors to listen, work hard and work together. "We are all here to serve the people," she said. Sandwell's first Reform mayor said she would be promoting togetherness in the local community during the year, adding that everyone was equal and everyone mattered. Alongside this article is a picture of Margaret Sutton. She is stood against a white background. She is wearing a white blazer. She has very white blonde hair and is wearing glasses with red lipstick. She is just kind of staring at the camera. It's captioned, Reform Councillor Margaret Sutton.
Hello everybody, this is Pam with some articles from the Express and Star, Saturday the 30th of May. Tom Watson is to take Lord's break after cancer diagnosis. Former Black Country MP says cancer returned, but despite uncertainty, feels good. By Harry Taylor, political reporter. Former Labour Deputy Leader Lord Tom Watson of Wyre Forest is taking a leave of absence from the House of Lords, he has said, after the return of his cancer. Former Black Country MP Lord Watson was diagnosed with non-aggressive prostate cancer in March 2023 and later received the all clear. However, the former minister under Sir Tony Blair and Gordon Brown said in a post on Substack on Friday that he was told earlier this year that the cancer had returned. The Labour peer said initial tests suggested the second bout of cancer had gone, but he was due to undergo more checks later this summer. It came as the government has recommended against a population-wide prostate cancer screening programme and said instead only a few thousand high-risk men should be tested. In his Substack post, Lord Watson, who resigned as a minister under Sir Tony to call for him to resign in 2006, detailed his struggle with weight loss after previously shedding more than 125 pounds. He said he had put weight back on in recent years after stopping exercising following his previous diagnosis. Lord Watson said he had previously used the weight loss drug Mounjaro, but had put the weight back on. He said he has stopped drinking, was exercising more and had changed his diet. The former MP for West Bromwich East wrote, "I knew the weight was piling on because my clothes no longer fitted me. Today's transgression would always be compensated for on another day at an undefined time, in a future that was somehow both inevitable and never scheduled. Weight, blood pressure and blood glucose were the only things I was strong enough to push upwards." He continued, "Not only was I obese again, but the cancer came back earlier this year. Is it weird to say this was the wake-up call I needed to choose life again? This time I knew I had to build life around health again, not bolt it on." He added, "So I have taken a leave of absence from the House of Lords for treatment and recuperation. Initial tests suggest the cancer has gone, though I will not know for certain until more tests in the summer. Despite the uncertainty, I feel good. Chipper, in fact." Schools invited to interpret and perform anthem. Schools across the Black Country are being invited to take part in an exciting new creative initiative to mark Black Country Day. The Black Country Anthem Schools Project encourages pupils to create and perform their own interpretation of the Black Country Anthem, celebrating what the region means to them through music, performance and storytelling. Open to primary, secondary and SEND schools, the project offers young people the opportunity to showcase their creativity in a wide range of forms. This can range from original lyrics and contemporary styles such as rap and spoken word, to more traditional performances including choirs and bands. Organisers said they hope the project will inspire pupils to explore the Black Country's rich heritage, culture and identity while building confidence, teamwork and pride in their local community ahead of Black Country Day on July the 14th. Participating schools must submit a filmed performance with entries judged on creativity, musicality, pupil involvement and overall impact. The closing date for entries is June the 19th. Mozza should have got job sooner. Long. Former Albion striker Shane Long believes the club missed a trick in not acting earlier to give James Morrison the managerial job. Club legend Morrison took charge on an interim basis for the third time in the space of 12 months following the sacking of Eric Ramsey. The former Baggies midfielder went on to guide Albion to safety following a lengthy unbeaten run, and his performance in the dugout was enough for the Baggies hierarchy to hand him the job permanently. It comes after years of Morrison serving as a coach under various Albion managers. In recent times, when Albion opted to change manager, Morrison was not in the picture to land the job. One of Morrison's former teammates believes things could have been different had Albion decided to turn to the former midfielder earlier. Ex-Albion striker Shane Long said, "West Brom's relegation battle was remarkable because they have a decent squad. I always found it funny because James Morrison has been there for years and they keep signing all these managers. They have had this guy in the building the whole time and he came in and went on a significant unbeaten run after taking over a team that was fighting relegation. When you have that under your roof the whole time, I am sure they are all thinking about why they didn't do this sooner. I know him as a guy as well. Great guy who loves his football. He has learned his trade there as a coach and now a manager, and I would love to see him do well. He started off brilliantly at the end of last season, saving them and having the record he has. Hopefully he can just start off on a high next year. It is a club that has a bit of a yo-yo reputation, going up and down to the Premier League, but they have been nowhere near it the last two or three seasons. It would be nice to see them challenging again, bringing the Baggies back up into a playoff situation. And who knows what could happen." "It's an honour and privilege," says new leader at council. Sandwell Council has a new reform leader after Councillor Ray Nock was sworn in at the annual meeting of the authority. Councillor Nock has been formally confirmed as the new leader of the council at Sandwell's annual meeting. Councillor Gary Dale has been appointed his deputy. Reform UK, to which Councillor Nock joined from the Conservatives, took overall control of Sandwell from Labour in the local elections on May the 7th. At the meeting on Tuesday, Councillor Nock said, "I was born in Sandwell and had lived and worked here all my life, so it is an honour and a privilege to be elected as the new leader of Sandwell Council. There is a lot to be proud of in Sandwell." And this article is accompanied by a picture of Councillor Ray Nock outside Sandwell Council House in Oldbury. And he's an older gentleman with white hair down to sort of collar length, and he's got a very dapper white moustache, and he's wearing a suit. Rich flavours and lots more to choose from. A family-run Indian street food restaurant has launched a brand new menu which combines traditional favourites with fusion mixes. Delhi Streets launched the new menu on Sunday, May the 24th. From its shop on Park Lane in Wednesbury, with a list of newer items as well as changes to existing dishes. These include new starters such as tandoori drummers and shami kebabs, as well as nods to other Asian cultures with bao buns and street noodles. Additionally, the restaurant has introduced a peshwari naan, an item the owners Mo and Enam Islam said a lot of people had been requesting since the restaurant opened in August last year, and also introduced a new box to its Delhi Street Boxes menu. The full scent box provides a wide range of dishes consisting of noodles or biryani, shami kebab, crispy veggie samosa, tandoori wings and an onion bhaji. Another change to the menu is on the Delhi-style wraps menu, with the wraps now offered as a separate item rather than coming with masala fries, with the owners saying it was another request from customers. The owners took to social media to thank customers for their support. The message read, "To everyone that's been supporting Delhi Streets, thank you."
Hello, this is Jenny. The following articles are from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday, 1st of June. 50 best pubs in Black Country, Staffordshire and Wyre Forest to enjoy an alfresco pint. Except I'm just going to be sharing two Black Country ones for you. This article is by James Vukmirovich and he picks the best in the Black Country, Staffordshire and Wyre Forest. We've taken a look at pubs of Love Your Local and picked out the best 50 pubs to sit outside and enjoy a drink in the summer months. Since the series launched 3 years ago, we have visited more than 150 pubs, taking in the architecture, the community feeling, the warm welcome of the staff and customers, and, above all, what the pub sells for people to drink. As a celebration of the series, we have picked out 50 of the best pubs for enjoying a pint outdoors, using Google reviews and information from the Campaign for Real Ale Camera website, to pick out the pubs which people love to sit outside and enjoy a drink. This list is in no particular order, so please let us know in the comments what your favourite is from the list. But as I said, however, I'm just going to be sharing two for you that are quite local to us. The first one is Ye Olde Leathern Bottle in Wednesbury. Ye Olde Leathern Bottle is a pub in Wednesbury that's been around since the 1500s. Firmly placed on the outside of the building, the sign states that the pub was established in 1510 and is said to be the oldest pub in the town. The four rooms have many old photos, with the bar displaying one of the pub from 1887 and a map of Wednesbury from 1846. The second pub I'm going to be sharing with you is the Tivy Ale in Tividale. Now, what started out as a former florist's career change in pursuit of a dream has bloomed into a pub which is a family business and is a popular spot for a quality pint. The idea of running a pub was one that Delwyn Sharp had had for a long time, but had set in his career as a wholesale florist until 2018, when, as his daughter Leanne Whirl puts it, he might have had a midlife crisis and decided to go for it. Tivy Ale was one of many pubs which worked to help the community during the COVID-19 pandemic, selling containers called Pub in a Box, full of pork scratchings, homemade cobs and two-pint containers, which continues to be a popular thing local within the community. Anger over amount of litter left at park amid the heatwave. An article by Isabella Bonham. Visitors to a Black Country park have spoken of their anger over the large amount of litter left behind amid the heatwave. Vicky Lowe, who lives in West Bromwich, was out on a walk at Samwell Valley Country Park on Wednesday, and instead of having a nice leisurely time, her blood was boiling. Mrs. Lowe said she was outraged as she saw huge amounts of litter left behind at the park. She told the Express and Star, "It's outrageous that this has been left like this. It makes my blood boil. I have a 4-year-old grandson that has cried this morning because of the animals that have to live by it all. It is so sad to see, and things need to be done to stop this. It is one of the worst instances I've seen of litter at the park, and it's getting worse." Ms. Lowe sent videos and pictures to the Express and Star, showing the litter left at the park and bins overflowing. A user on Facebook posted on the group, "I live in West Bromwich," on Tuesday, also complaining about the state of the park after the heatwave. She said, "The state of Samwell Valley after the heatwave is absolutely disgusting. Trash everywhere, just left behind by dirty people. Nappies, towels, pants, food, empty packets, broken glass, this list goes on. If you were at Samwell over the weekend and left your trash behind, you should be ashamed. The fact that people were up there today, putting their blankets and towels out to lie among the rubbish on the floor, just grim." One user commented that there needs to be more workers patrolling the area, while another suggested the idea of introducing fines, adding, "I think at this point, this is the only thing people will understand." It comes as temperatures soared last week in the Black Country amid a heatwave. Temperatures hit highs of up to 33 degrees Celsius, and many had been enjoying the sun at parks and pools in the region. Samwell Council said in a statement, Samwell Council would like to highlight that during the recent bank holiday weekend, the extremely hot weather led to a significant increase in visitor numbers at Samwell Valley and Dartmouth Park, which in turn resulted in a substantial rise in litter. Whilst additional resources were deployed to help manage the situation, the sheer volume of waste provided challenging for us to keep up with. Samwell Valley and Dartmouth Park are valued community assets, enjoyed by tens of thousands of visitors each year, and we are proud to offer these spaces for everyone to enjoy. We kindly urge all visitors to treat these areas with respect by using the bins provided. If bins are full, please take your waste home and dispose of it responsibly to help keep our parks clean and safe for all. The penalty for littering our green spaces is £500, and we will take enforcement action. Iconic Pie Factory Preparing Spicy Challenge, an article by James Vikmirovich. Spice lovers and patriotic England supporters alike are being invited to take on a new and very hot challenge at an iconic Black Country restaurant. The team at Mad O'Rourke's Pie Factory in Tipton are putting the finishing touches on a beef vindaloo pie ahead of the start of the 2026 World Cup on June 11th. The pie will be available for people to try and buy, with a certificate being handed out to anyone able to complete the pie. The pie comes as a result of a post on Facebook from the restaurant, asking for ideas for a special World Cup pie. And manager Jenna Morris said the majority of replies had been for the vindaloo, invoking the spirit of the Fat Les song from 1998. She said, "We put the post on Facebook a couple of weeks ago as we didn't know what pie to do for the World Cup and people said vindaloo. We then thought we should make it a challenge, which is why we've got the certificate as well. So we're going to try and make it as spicy as we can, and there's a lot of people who've said they'd love to give it a go. Customers have been coming in and asking about it, so I think they're all really intrigued, and I think a few men will have a go after a few pints." "We will deliver on our election pledges," says council leader. "Weekly bin collection and free parking plan after substantial savings found." An article by Christian Barnett, local democracy reporter. A council's new reform leader says substantial savings have already been found as the party looks to bring back weekly bin collections and free car parking as part of pre-election promises. Councillor Ray Nock was elected leader of Samwell Council on Tuesday after Reform snatched power away from Labour for the first time since 1979 in this month's local elections. Following the appointment, Councillor Nock told the meeting the Reform Cabinet had already spent the past weeks working to make the borough a much better place to live, but did not mention restoring weekly bin collections or scrapping fees for council-owned car parks. Councillor Nock had also previously promised to freeze council tax in Reform's first year in office. "We've already highlighted substantial savings, money which I can assure you will go to frontline services," he said at the meeting. "I can assure everyone that every penny will be spent wisely as we endeavour to make our borough fairer and a much better place to live." Welcomed into the new role by Green Councillor John Tipper, Councillor Nock was asked about Reform's main election promises. "I wish Ray all the best," Councillor Tipper said, "and although I have no brief from the Labour group, to such an extent that I left them to join another party, Councillor Nock does inherit a fairly solid council from the outgoing Labour group. If the Reform councillors are looking for a hole in the budget, I don't think they are going to find one. Since it will cost over £5 million a year to restore weekly bin collections, I'm interested in which of our residents' lives the Reform Group is willing to make worse to pay for it," Councillor Tipper added. Reform Councillor Brad Sims replied, "I will say that some people in Sandwell voted for something completely new. They wanted change. And in regards to parking, will it turn back time? You don't know until you try. At least we are forward-thinking enough so we can actually improve residents' lives, make the high street safe with more people visiting. It's definitely something we can all work on together. Irrespective of party, we are here for the good of all residents and I support it. School workers are being pushed to the edge as strike action looms. Teachers, teaching assistants and catering staff at a Midland school will begin strike action tomorrow as part of an ongoing dispute. The strike, which is set to take place at 10 a.m, is joint action between GMB, the Union for School Support Staff, and NASUWT, Britain's Teachers Union. 90 workers at the Orchard School are anticipated to join strike action, which comes weeks after overwhelming support for industrial action in a recent ballot of staff at the school. The union said workers were furious after school bosses failed to respond to grievances and concern raised about students and staff safety at the facility. The workers will stage a rally outside Samwell Council House on Free Street in Albury to mark the first day of strike action. Rachel Fagan, GMB organiser, said, "From unreported health and safety violations to missed pay packets, these school workers have been pushed to the edge and forced to take action. Now workers are standing up to do what's right for them and the students that they care for. We've written to Samwell's new leadership to demand they take action in the face of a groaning list of serious problems at the school. This strike action will send a clear message that Sandwell school workers will not be taken for granted."
Welcome back to the Express and Star pub quiz. News. Question 1. Which British music legend has described meeting Elvis Presley in 1965 as a pinch yourself moment? Question 2. The King has been praised for understanding nature during a visit to a project aimed at promoting which rodent that has seen a decline in its numbers in the UK in recent years? Question 3. Which member of Girls Aloud has announced the birth of their first child, a girl? Sport. Question 4. Hannah Mills and Ailey McIntyre are Olympic gold medalists in which sport? Question 5. How many times did Paula Radcliffe win the London Marathon? Remember when? Question 6. The first jumbo jet landed at Heathrow Airport. The very first Glastonbury Festival took place. Oh Calcutta opened at the Roundhouse in London, and Sir Laurence Olivier was given a life peerage. Question 7. Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan released their number one hit, Especially for You. Stefan Edberg beat Boris Becker in the men's singles competition at Wimbledon. François Mitterrand became French president for the second time, and the legendary video game Tetris was released. Who am I? Question 8. A pioneer of Bangra Muffin, I was born in Handsworth, Birmingham in 1967. I had a massive global hit in 1993 with Boom Shakalak, which featured in Hollywood films Dumb and Dumber and Scooby-Doo 2. In 2011, I received the UK Asian Music Awards Lifetime Achievement Award, and I performed at the closing ceremony of the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. But who am I? Question 9. Born in Leicester in 1946, I am an English writer and humorist whose work encompasses novels, plays and works of journalism. I became Britain's best-selling novelist of the 1980s with my diaries about a spotty teenager called Adrian Mole. Despite losing my sight in 2001 due to advanced diabetic retinopathy, I dictated The Woman Who Went to Bed for a Year to my son, which was awarded the Specsavers National Book Awards. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Birmingham-born presenter became famous for her humorous celebrity interviews on This Morning, co-presented the Great British Bake Off with Noel Fielding, was the first black woman to host the BAFTA Film Awards, and refused a place at a drama school because they wanted to fix her Birmingham accent? How's your knowledge in this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers to this week's quiz. News. Question 1. Which British music legend has described meeting Elvis Presley in 1965 as a pinch-yourself moment? Sir Paul McCartney. Question 2. The King has been praised for understanding nature during a visit to a project aimed at promoting which rodent that has seen a decline in its numbers in the UK in recent years? The Red Squirrel. Question 3. Which member of Girls Aloud has announced the birth of their first child, a girl? Nicola Roberts. Sport. Question 4. Hannah Mills and Ailey McIntyre are Olympic gold medalists in which sport? Sailing. Question 5. How many times did Paula Radcliffe win the London Marathon? 3. 2002, 2003 and 2005. Remember when? Question 6. The first jumbo jet landed at Heathrow Airport. The very first Glastonbury Festival took place. Oh, Calcutta opened at the Roundhouse in London, and Sir Laurence Olivier was given a life peerage. 1970. Question 7. Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan released their number one hit, Especially For You. Stefan Edberg beat Boris Becker in the men's singles competition at Wimbledon. François Mitterrand became French president for the second time. And the legendary video game Tetris was released. 1988. Who am I? Question 8. A pioneer of Bangra Muffin, I was born in Handsworth, Birmingham in 1967. I had a massive global hit in 1993 with Boom Shakalak, which featured in Hollywood films Dumb and Dumber and Scooby-Doo 2. In 2011, I received the UK Asian Music Awards Lifetime Achievement Award, and I performed at the closing ceremony of the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. But who am I? Apache Indian, or Stephen Kapoor. Question 9. Born in Leicester in 1946, I am an English writer and humorist whose work encompasses novels, plays and works of journalism. I became Britain's best-selling novelist of the 1980s with my diaries about a spotty teenager called Adrian Mole. Despite losing my sight in 2001 due to advanced diabetic retinopathy, I dictated The Woman Who Went to Bed for a Year to my son, which was awarded the Specsavers National Book Awards. But who am I? Sue Townsend. Local knowledge. Question 10. Which Birmingham-born presenter became famous for her humorous celebrity interviews on This Morning, co-presented the Great British Bake Off with Noel Fielding, was the first black woman to host the BAFTA Film Awards, and refused a place at a drama school because they wanted to fix her Birmingham accent? Alison Hammond. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Sophie from Wonder in Nature.
Today we've been to West Smethwick Park, and we've had a wonderful variety of weather. We've had the wind rustling through the trees, and we've had lovely mizzle and drizzle. And when we were next to the lake, that's when the rain decided to go for it a bit more. And so we had, it rained. It wasn't terrible, but it was wet, rather than just mizzly or drizzly. So Sandra, would you like to say something for Talking News about our day?
It was a very nice, interesting walk, very different to the last one, which was gloriously hot and sunny. So today we had sounds, the wind, sounds of the wind, sounds of the rain, sounds of the water, the rain on the water, the different sounds of people walking when the ground's wet. The cane sounded different, the long cane sounded different. Very good.
Kelly, would you like to add something?
I am doing the leaves. I can't remember what they were called.
The leaves. You're doing the hosta. Tiny leaves.
Yeah, the leaves.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, no. It looked like a lily, and it felt a lot rougher than it looked. They were very low down around the pond, which we were listening to the rain and the birds taking flight. Got very wet. But, yeah, enjoyed the day.
And you've made a lovely heart-shaped leaf.
Yeah, I'm trying. It's moving.
With air-dried clay. If you let that dry, then it will stay the shape. If you get a little cocktail stick and poke it through to make a hole, you could then put a ribbon through it and hang it somewhere at home when it's dried. So, Jo, what would you like to tell the group?
I had a lovely time. I enjoyed taking my shoes off, feet off, feeling the nature, the feel of the grass, different textures underneath my skin. I enjoyed learning about the different sort of houses as well. I was sitting under the trees. I liked it from the woodpeckers to bats to like owls as well. Owls have like a different sort of to the woodpeckers. I enjoyed as well, like feeding the ducks as well, the oats, the wholemeal bread as well, feeding them as well, and the way that they came in, like a sort of V shape as well. I enjoyed listening to the sounds of the different sort of raindrops dropping in, like onto our face, a little spittle onto our faces, and dropping onto the leaves and the trees as well. I enjoy as well the different sort of like but let's step up with that, the fact that when we go on these nature walks, we can have our, like with our senses experience different sort of like natures as well, like birds with our like sense of touch, smell and hear as well, which I really enjoyed.
Simon, what could you possibly add to that?
I just like going round, feeling the different trees and seeing the different birds.
And we saw some nice texture today. You found, what was that piece of wood you found?
A piece of bark.
Yeah, off a black poplar.
Yeah.
And Tracy, did you have a good time?
You enjoyed listening to sounds of the trees and the birds.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Tracy. And you've made a gorgeous leaf there out of air-dried clay. That one's Simon's. And Joe, you're getting stuck in there with a sculpting a whole work of art. Oh, yeah, you're making a flower, a daisy. Yeah,
a little daisy.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. So, yes, we've had a fabulous time. Rain didn't stop play. In fact, it added to things. What does that look like, Simon, in terms of that piece of bark you've picked up, if you can describe that for the Talking News?
It's like a miniature log with lots of different textures and layers with moss on it.
It makes me think of a Cadbury's flake.
Yeah.
A giant.
Then it's very smooth on the bottom.
On the inside of the tree?
Yeah, very smooth.
And what tree did we decide that's part of the bark?
Poplar.
A black poplar, yeah. And I found a black poplar recently that's fallen, and inside the
wood is like balsa. It's really pulpy and weak, which is why I think they have such a strong bark. Yeah. Beautiful black poplar here in West Smethwick Park, three of them. And we've just been listening to the wind in the trees and exploring the little fruits that have come on the black poplar. And then I was playing some sounds with them, knocking them. I'll see if I can do that again in a moment. Here we are, I'm just going past a cherry tree. I'm going over to the black poplar tree because I do like delivering sound baths and I like exploring sounds in nature. So here we are. That's the black poplar. When I'm shaking it, the leaves are quite waxy and the flowers are like a run of little sweets, like Tic Tacs on a stem. So they're really rattling against it. Whereas when it's just a gentle wind, when I'm not playing it, it's more kind of shushy like this. And you might be able to hear, just got a little bit of rain coming now. So we've been exploring the sounds under the trees. And now we're going to go into another zone. So the next Nature Connection activity will be at Oak House on the first Monday of July. So please do join us, the more the merrier. Sophie from Wandering Nature, see you soon.
And as you heard, the next Wandering Nature walk will be in July, and that sounded a rather wet and windy walk in the park, as I think you heard from the recording they made at the end of that feature. On now to the next week's Audio Describe TV programmes that might be of interest, and also the radio programmes from Talking News Federation.
Some Audio Described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the Audio Described television programmes for the week beginning Saturday the 6th of June and ending Friday the 12th of June 2026. Written by John and read by Chris. Saturday the 6th. There are Homes Under the Hammer from Northampton, Leeds and Coventry on BBC One at 12 noon. Bargain Hunt is from Wetherby Racecourse at 1:15 on BBC One. When digging an escape tunnel is too long, the inmates of Stalag Luft 3 hit upon an ingenious plan. The Wooden Horse is the afternoon film on BBC Two starting at 12:15 p.m. Military discipline at the local barracks seems to have turned into bullying, but can Flynn save the day? Casualty on BBC One at 8:25. There's international football on ITV One at 8:15 with the match between England and New Zealand. And on BBC Two at 8:30, there's the friendly match between Scotland and Bolivia as Scotland starts their first World Cup series in 28 years. Both matches kick off at 9 p.m. and neither match is audio described, but hopefully the commentary will explain how the matches are progressing. Zoe feels liberated at a party hosted by eccentric expats, while Dan spirals into a dark place. 2 weeks in August is on BBC One at 9:15 this evening. How about an action film for your late night entertainment? CIA agent Brian Mills plans a trip to Istanbul with his daughter and ex-wife, but the father of a kidnapper he killed is hell-bent on revenge. Taken 2 is on ITV One at 11:40. On to Sunday the 7th. More politicians are put under the spotlight on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg. It's on BBC One at 9 a.m. Mary Berry visits Bristol and serves up a prawn stir-fry in Mary Berry Cook and Share on BBC Two at 11:30 a.m. There are two films about the Americas this afternoon on BBC One, starting at 3 p.m. with Florida's Crystal River, with Exploring the Andes following at 3:40. Both are narrated by Tom Hanks. How do tigers raise their young in West Bengal, on an island full of dangers? A team of city scientists document their lives in Tiger Island on BBC One at 7:15. There's more wildlife at 8:15 on BBC Two, when Steve Backshall travels into the Eden of Africa in Gabon to locate an undiscovered community of chimpanzees. Part two of the true story about the charity Believe in Magic continues at 9 on BBC Two. Megan Barry takes a group of sick children to Walt Disney World in Florida for Christmas, while sceptical parents try to prove the charity is built on a lie. But then a tragedy makes them question everything they've uncovered. The Mother of All Cons on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. When the founder of a New Age commune is found impaled on a horse plough, Janie seems uncharacteristically keen to clear the case quickly. It soon becomes clear why, as her estranged father is revealed to be one of the commune. Death Valley is on BBC One at 9:15. Now a look at the programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30, Bargain Hunt at 12:15, Robson Green's Weekend Escapes at 2:30, but not on Friday, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m, but at 2:45 on Friday. Now on the other channels, Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV1 at 2, but not on Friday. Great Continental Railway Journeys is on BBC Two at 6:30. Two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV3 starting at 5:50 and 6:55 p.m. Law and Order UK, two episodes starting at 10 p.m. on ITV3. The soaps are as follows. EastEnders, BBC One, Monday to Thursday at 7:30. Emmerdale, ITV1 at 8 o'clock all week, and Coronation Street, ITV1 at 8:30 all week. Back to the weekdays, starting with Monday the 8th. PC Wade witnesses a micra taking a roundabout at excessive speed. Motorway cops catching Britain's speeders on Channel 5 at 7. The family gathered their flock of sheep for the rather smelly job of worming treatment. Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV1 at 7. England's former football manager, Gareth Southgate, looks at how boys and young men are struggling with identity and hope. He visits unemployed men in Middlesbrough, boys coping with secondary education in Essex, and visits young prison inmates before exploring potential solutions for school, work and beyond. Gareth Southgate, Changing the Game for Young Men, is on BBC One at 9. On the 23rd of June 2016, the UK voted to leave the EU. 10 years on, this documentary recounts the run-up to the referendum and the political fallout from the result. Brexit, A Very British Civil War, on BBC Two at 9. Part 4 of Tiptoe is on Channel 4 at 9. Bob and Paul travel to Hampshire to fish for trout on the River Itchen. Can Paul catch a brown trout for his birthday? Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing on BBC Two at 10. On to Tuesday the 9th. The two finalists travel to Longleat Safari Park, where they take inspiration to transform rental cottages. Interior Design Masters with Alan Carr, the final, is on BBC One at 8. The tasks include creating savoury laminated tarts, cream buns and a landmark showpiece made from biscuit. It must be Bake Off the Professionals on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Joe Walsh, the former EastEnders actor and reality star, goes in search of his Italian roots in Who Do You Think You Are on BBC One at 9. The war between Leo and Clive reaches a shocking climax in the final of Tiptoe on Channel 4 at 9. Simon investigates how the British Empire failed to match up to reality in A History of Britain by Simon Sharma, which is on BBC 4 at 9. Now Wednesday the 10th. A leather darts case, an unusual clock, and a life-size model horse are all in need of help from the repair shop on BBC One at 8 o'clock. Chief historian Tracy Borman learns that the Tower of London was once the centre of an international spy ring. Inside the Tower of London is on Channel 5 at 8. Professor Brian Cox explores the heavens, starting with the luminous bodies that bring light and warmth to the universe. Tonight, the Sun, Gold Star. Universe is on BBC 4 at 8. Amanda hosts a prom pre-party at her flat. Amandaland is on BBC One at 9. Tonight, surgeons tackle a life-threatening tumour and use unerring precision to save a patient from paralysis. Surgeons at the Edge of Life on BBC Two at 9. Thursday the 11th. This week sees the start of the 2026 World Cup. The opening ceremony is on ITV One at 6:15, which is followed by the opening game between Mexico and South Africa, which is on ITV One at 7:50, with kick-off at 8. This is not audio described, but the commentary should make you feel you are there. The team helps the Jameson family transform their home, taking everything from their converted bungalow and displaying it in a warehouse. As they sort through, emotions rise. Sort Out Your Life with Stacey Solomon is on BBC One at 8. Reported missing at 9 on BBC One, looks at the cases in Edinburgh. Gabby has not been responding to messages, and Dave has failed to return to her care unit after school. Brittany, in 10 pictures, examines the spectacular rise and turbulent life of Britney Spears through 10 key photographs. This episode chronicles a life in the glare of the media spotlight. It is on BBC Two at 9. Mary agrees to help organise the Harvest Festival, but her class is thrown off course. The Hardacres continues on Channel 5 at 9. It's the final of Taskmaster on Channel 4 at 9. Amy tears her hair out. Armando plays the recorder while riding a trike with a plunger on his head. And Joanna lays waste to little Alex's home. Celebrity Gogglebox is on Channel 4 at 11. And finally, Friday the 12th of June. Daisy risks joining Marissa's book club to meet David's daughter, but gets the wrong book. Under the Vines on BBC One at 2 p.m. The World Cup match tonight is between Canada and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Coverage starts at 7 with kick-off at 8. Again, this isn't audio described. Experts maintain a spinning mule at the Quarry Bank Mill and specialists restore a period cottage at Kimber Edge. Hidden Treasures of the National Trust is on BBC Two at 9. Pantalone plans to steal £12 million in diamonds, but to do the job, he's hired a bunch of clowns who are willing to double-cross each other. Inside Number 9 is on BBC Two at 10. The celebrity armchair critics review this week's programmes in Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 9. The late-night film on BBC One is a romantic comedy. Lifelong pals John and Jeremy gatecrash weddings to pick up women. At the wedding of the daughter of the Treasury Secretary, Jeremy accepts an invitation to an extended weekend party. What could possibly go wrong? Weekend Crashers is on BBC One at 11:35 tonight. We hope you find something of interest in this week's selections.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, June 6th. The King Must Die, part two of a dramatisation of Mary Renault's novel of the myth of Theseus. Radio 3, 3 o'clock, Saturday afternoon. 2 hours of classic humour on Radio 4 Extra at 8 p.m. with Morecambe and Wise, then Beyond Our Ken, and the inimitable P.G. Woodhouse. Sunday, June 7th, Elaine Page on Sunday, and this week's edition has only picks from award-winning musicals and movies. Radio 2, 1 o'clock, Sunday afternoon. Opening lines, John York explores Dylan Thomas's portrait of the artist as a young dog, followed at 3 o'clock on Radio 4 by a dramatisation of the short story. And Word of Mouth with Michael Rosen is on Radio 4, Sunday night, 8 p.m. On to programmes then that are serialised Monday to Friday at the same time each day on the same radio station. So same time, same radio station all week, Monday to Friday. Book of the week, The Butterfly Season. One woman's search for all of Denmark's 64 species of butterfly. Radio 4, 11:45 a.m. Jeremy Vine is on Radio 2 all week with music and topical chat at lunchtime, 12 noon, Monday to Friday. 10 years after Brexit, an examination of the impact of leaving the EU. Radio 4 all week, 1:45 in the afternoon. Matt Chorley brings his own unique take to the news and political discussion on Radio 5 Live all week at 2 o'clock. While a country house dramatisation of a story in which a pianist specialising in Chopin is haunted by the ghost of Chopin's lover. Radio 4 Extra, 3 o'clock, all week, Monday to Friday. 60 Years of Hurt, David Baddiel looks at the golden generation of England footballers as we build up to the World Cup, which starts in a few days. Radio 4, 3:30, all week. Composer of the Week, Monty Verdi. Radio 3 at 4 o'clock, Monday to Friday. And Blackwater, a new crime novel by Heidi Amzinak, read by Mayanna Burring. Radio 4, 10:45 p.m. all week. Let's go back to the individual highlights then for the rest of the week, Monday to Friday, starting with Monday, June 8th. I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue is a comedy panel game at 6:30 on Radio 4. While Rethink is back on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. and it's part two of a five-part series called Monarchies in the Modern World, exploring how ancient governance systems adapt to modern political, technological and social realities. Radio 4 for the Rethink series, 8 o'clock on Monday evening. Tuesday, June 9th, an add to playlist. If you haven't heard this before, they connect one piece of music to another piece of music to another piece of music all the way through the programme. There are five connected tracks from one to the other. Radio 4, Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Our Friends in the North, the radio adaptation of the brilliant 1990s drama from BBC TV. We're up to episode 3, 1967, just after the swinging 60s, of course. 2:15, Radio 4 on Tuesday afternoon. History's Heroes focus on Sophie Blanchard, the woman astronaut, on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. While Poetry Please was recorded last week at the Hay Festival, Radio 4, 4 p.m. In June is a special broadcast from the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic on Radio 3 at 5 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. One person found this helpful, a comedy discussion with tonight's subjects including necks and ice sculptures. Radio 4, the comedy slot at 6:30 p.m. While as it's Tuesday, In Touch, the latest news for the blind and partially sighted. Radio 4, 8:40 p.m. Wednesday, June 10th, To Catch a King. We're up to episode 5 on Radio 4, the closed world of smugglers and their bankers. 9:30, Wednesday morning. Classical Live includes works by Holst and Walton on Radio 3 at 1 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. The Shoemakers is all about boots and shoemaking in Northampton. Radio 4 Extra at 4 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. While Ian Smith is stressed, the comedian discusses male fertility, bus timetables and Wi-Fi. It's episode 4 of this in the comedy slot on Radio 4 at 6:30 on Wednesday night. I mentioned the World Cup earlier. It's the eve of the tournament. So the latest news ahead of the World Cup, starting in America, 2026, Radio 5 Live from 7 p.m. with Sport on 5. And The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe, Radio 2, 9 o'clock, Wednesday night. Thursday, June 11th, the drama, The Goalkeeper's Guide to Absurdism. Albert Camus's fever dream as he stands in goal. Radio 4, 2:15, Thursday afternoon. Word of Mouth is this week's episode with Michael Rosen, and he finds out how to describe smells. Radio 4 at 3:30, Thursday afternoon. I'm sorry, I'll read that again. The 1965 sketch show on Radio 4 Extra at 6:30 p.m. While The Country Show with Darius Rucker is on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. on Thursday. Finally, Friday, June 12th, and Limelight, The Courier. It's a crime drama. We're up to episode 2 of 5, Radio 4, 2:15, on Friday afternoon. Ken Clark's jazz greats focus on Benny Goodman in this week's edition on Radio 4 Extra, 4:30 p.m. Add to Playlist is back again on Radio 4 at 7:15, 5 connected tracks on Radio 4. Free Thinking, a look at satire on the 30th anniversary of Gulliver's Travels, Radio 4 at 9 p.m. While if you'd like something else to end your week, Friday night is of course Music Night, with concert marking the City of Portsmouth's centenary. Radio 3, 7 p.m. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, this is Kate and I'm reading you some articles from the Express and Star. The 2nd of June, Building Society is named one of the Sunday Times best places to work in 2026. West Bromwich Building Society has secured a place on the Sunday Times Best Places to Work 2026 list, marking its second consecutive year of recognition. The annual list celebrates organisations from across the UK that demonstrate high levels of employee engagement and workplace satisfaction. The West Brom inclusion reflects its focus on creating a supportive and rewarding working environment shaped by its listening to colleagues and responding to what matters to them most. A key development has been the launch of the new recognition scheme, introduced as a direct response to colleague feedback and shaped by recognition champions across the society. The scheme offers a wide range of benefits and perks, enabling more personalised and meaningful recognition. The Society also remains committed to equity, inclusion and diversity, with its colleague-led Connect group helping to shape an inclusive workplace. Networks such as the Pride Inclusive Network and Women's Inclusive Network support activity throughout the year, creating an environment where colleagues feel seen, heard and able to be themselves. Other achievements include becoming the first Building Society and West Midlands business to gain all three Living Wage Foundation accreditations for wages, hours and pensions in March 2025. This was followed by the West Brom Building Society Foundation being recognised as the Living Wage Funder later that year, meaning together they became just the third in the UK to achieve all four accreditations, reinforcing a focus on fair reward and financial well-being. In addition, the West Brom achieved B Corp certification independently, recognising its high standards of social and environmental performance. And this article is supported by a photograph of the West Bromwich Building Society, now known to people as the West Brom, and it's just showing a photograph of the frontage of their shop, so it's their classic purple colour scheme. A call for review in continuing care rejections. CHC is a package of health and social care that's provided outside of hospital. A rise in the proportion of people being turned down for NHS funding for their care after a reassessment has been branded deeply concerning by the health charity. An increase in people being told that they can no longer have such care has come despite no change in the criteria for entitlement to NHS continuing healthcare, which is CHC, the acronym the King's Fund said. CHC is a package of health and social care provided outside of hospital which the NHS pays for. It's for people who are identified as having primary health need, but has repeatedly hit the headlines for being an unfair system. Various parliamentary reports have criticised how funding is allocated across the UK, while the National Audit Office previously said the system can leave families without support they are entitled to. Eligibility for the funding is decided locally by teams who report into the Integrated Care Boards, ICBS, with assessors deciding whether a people's needs are high enough to qualify for funding. The King's Fund analysed NHS England data and found that the number of recipients of Fast Track CHC for people whose condition is rapidly deteriorating and might be approaching the end of their lives, deemed to be no longer eligible after reassessment, rose by 28.21% between the 3 months to June 2018 and the 3 months to March 2026, which is the latest data available. The charity said that the criteria for support had not changed within this period. Its research also appeared to show the proportion of applicants for standard CHC provided to those with long-term and complex physical or mental health needs, which are primarily health rather than social care needs, assessed as eligible for support, had fallen from almost 1 in 3 9 years ago to fewer than 1 in 5 now. People deemed as no longer eligible for care can include those who have died and those who turned down a care package despite being assessed as eligible, as well as those no longer said to meet the criteria. But the King's Fund said that based on other research, including by Age UK, a significant cause was a rise in rejections rather than being only down to deaths or people turning down packages. A report from Age UK in December 2024 found thousands of people were having NHS funding for their care withdrawn after living longer than expected. The King's Fund, which is publishing a report on Tuesday on the experience of patients who fall between the health and social care systems, is calling for a review into the drop in CHC eligibility, focusing particularly on the different approaches depending on where someone is within the country. The charity has insisted eligibility to publicly funded social care should be widened and called on the ongoing independent Casey Commission into social care reform, which is due to report some of its findings and recommendations to the government later this year, to make this recommendation. Katie Purbrick-Thompson and Neve Buckingham, co-authors of the report and policy advisers at the King's Fund, said, "The drop in CHC eligibility, despite no change in the criteria, is deeply concerning." Historic site earmarked for 118 homes in regeneration. Heritage groups say site represents significant opportunity to bring new life to area. A long vacant site in the heart of Smethwick could be transformed into a new neighbourhood of 118 homes after being highlighted in a National Heritage Regeneration Programme. The former Smethwick Enterprise Centre on Roll Street has been included in Historic England's 2026 Heritage Investment Prospectus, a document designed to attract developers and investors to historic sites with the potential for housing-led redevelopment. Historic England says the site represents a significant opportunity to bring new life to an important part of Smethwick in industrial heritage while delivering much-needed housing. The 0.97 hectare site forms part of the 23.5 million Smethwick town deal as an already received. Government funding for demolition and remediation works to prepare it for redevelopment. Samwell Council is now seeking a development partner to deliver a housing-led scheme that respects the area's rich industrial past. Plans outlined in the prospectus include 118 new homes alongside space for small businesses, a public square, green areas around the canal network and improved walking links between Smethwick Rolf Street railway station, the town centre and the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital. The site occupies a prominent position within the Smethwick Summit, Gorton Valley Conservation Area, an area closely linked to the story of the Industrial Revolution. Historic England notes that Rolf Street developed around the Birmingham Old Mainline Canal before the arrival of Thomas Telford's new mainline in the 19th century, helping to turn the area into a major industrial centre. Several features will be retained as part of the redevelopment, including the facade facing Rolf Street, the former fire station training tower, and a Grade 2 listed retaining wall from the old corporation yard. This article is supported by a photograph of the site of the former Smethwick Enterprise Centre in Rolf Street, Smethwick. And it's sort of like an old red brown brick building, and it's there in front of the canal. Two more teens are charged with attempted murder after stabbing. Two more teenagers have been charged with attempted murder after a double stabbing during disorder in Smethwick. Police arrested an 18-year-old man at the weekend as part of their inquiries into the armed violence on Foundry Lane last Tuesday evening. Edson Silva from Lascelles has now been charged with two counts of attempted murder and possession of a knife. He was remanded to appear before Birmingham Magistrate Court yesterday. It comes after police arrested and charged a 17-year-old boy who cannot be named due to his age with the same offences on Friday. He appeared in court on Saturday. West Midlands Police have now charged three teenagers in connection with the disorder that happened around 9:30 p.m. Two men were taken to hospital with stab wounds and a 21-year-old remains in hospital with serious injuries, although they're not believed to be life-threatening. West Midlands Police said their investigation remains ongoing and we continue to ask people with information to contact us. The force added, "We've set up a dedicated web page where footage can be uploaded securely. Public portal. You can also get in touch by calling 101 or via live chat on our website, quoting log 5971 of 26 May. Information can also be passed to Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. Council speaks out as staff at schools set for strike action. Local authority says it's investigating the issues raised by teachers and staff. A council said they are investigating serious problems raised by teachers and staff at a SEND school in Oldbury as they prepare to strike over their concerns. Teachers, teaching assistants and catering staff at the Orchard in Causeway Green Road, Oldbury, were due to begin strike action today over safety concerns at the SEND school. Staff are said to be furious after school bosses failed to respond to concerns about student and staff safety at the facility, including unreported health and safety violations and missed pay packets. In a statement, Samwell Council said the safety and wellbeing of children remained its top priority and it was investigating the issues raised by teachers and staff. A protest was due to be held outside Samwell Council House in Oldbury to mark the first day of the strike action organised by GMB, the Union for School Support Staff and Teaching Union, the NASUWT. GMB said the school's workers had been pushed to the edge in the face of serious problems at the school and up to 90 members of staff were expected to strike today, which comes weeks after the overwhelming support for industrial action ballot of staff. A spokesperson for Samwell Council said, "The Orchard School will be closed to pupils on Tuesday, June the 2nd, due to planned strike action by two of the school's unions. We fully recognise this disruption of closure will cause the families, and we are sorry for the inconvenience. Parents and carers were informed in advance to allow time to make alternative arrangements. The needs of our children are complex, and we want to reassure people that the safety and well-being of our children and staff remain our priority. The school and council have been actively investigating the issues raised and remain committed to working constructively with all parties concerned in finding solutions.
DNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Jenny Murray was one of the best recognised voices in radio. She was born in 1950 in Barnsley in Yorkshire, and she went to school there and then to university in Hull. So it must have been a bit of a geographical shock when she went to Bristol to join the BBC through the traditional route, local radio first. She then went to BBC South, where she was newsreader and presenter, then into BBC Television Newsnight, then to Today, BBC radio programme Today, and from there to Woman's Hour, where she took over from Sue McGregor in 1987, and she actually was there for 33 years. My guest, Jill Burridge, who actually worked with her, she knew her well, and she also had a career in radio, starting in local radio, and then working up, and she became the editor of Woman's Hour in 2002?
Yes, that's right. I'd been a producer on Woman's Hour, but also on a programme called Treasure Islands, which was about children's books. It was for adults, but it was about children's books, and it was presented by Michael Rosen. I was a freelance at that stage. So I was also doing items for Woman's Hour and came across Jenny in that context. And then when Treasure Islands finished, I did more for Woman's Hour. I've always worked for Woman's Hour. I was a producer on it back in the 70s, actually. After local radio, I went to Woman's Hour. So I was very well versed in the programme and its agenda and its history, and so was Jenny. So when I became editor, she knew that I recognised the heritage of the programme, which she did too.
What's the hierarchy? Who's in charge?
The editor is in charge, and actually is also in charge of the presenter. So you're managing the presenter, managing the powers that be and what they think of it. And you're also managing a team of producers, which, as you can imagine, has diminished over the years with all the cuts that the BBC has had to make. I had a team of about 7 or 8 producers and some assistant producers and broadcast assistants to sort of back you up. Because when you're doing 5 live programmes Monday to Friday, and then the Saturday programme is a best of the week, which has to be recorded on the Friday to go out on the Saturday. We were working against the clock every morning because, you know, we would arrive in shortly after 6 and we were on air at 10. And it was fairly full on because Jenny needed to be briefed on each item. She needed to write her own question line from the notes and the structure that had been provided. And sometimes we'd pre-recorded items if people couldn't manage to get in live. So we were against the clock. Jenny was demanding, quite rightly. She needed to stick to a time schedule and get through it all and be in the studio ready to go on air by 10 o'clock. So if people weren't up to the mark, she didn't hesitate to tell them. And she had this sort of aura about to say, if you were briefing her, you went in and you sat on the chair, but you didn't talk to her. She talked to you and asked you questions, and you let her direct the conversation. Jenny used to present Monday to Thursday in London, and she would then go up to Manchester and she would present Woman's Hour from the regions on a Friday. Sometimes it came from Bristol, in which case Jenny wasn't presenting, and sometimes it came from Dublin, Cardiff. So that was the regional programme. But Jenny did Monday to Thursday with us in London. And the editor is in charge, and it's your vision what goes into the programme. Everybody has to contribute in terms of ideas, and the producers produce. There's a day producer, but they aren't responsible for all the items in the programme. Other producers will produce the items, and they do briefing notes, which go to the presenter. So the night before, Jenny would get all her briefing notes for about four or five items in the programme. She always used to say that we gave her the wherewithal and she took it to air. That's not to say that she didn't have ideas, as you can imagine. She was a personality in her own right. After every programme, which was always live, afterwards we used to have a meeting, which I called the wash-up, and we'd discuss what went right and what went wrong and what we could have done differently, and Jenny came to that. A lot of ideas came from that meeting. Conversation would get going from that, and very often ideas would come out of what we'd been just chatting about. And then Jenny would contribute. She was very much her own boss when it got to going to air. But there was briefing and guidance and discussion as to direction and tone and that sort of thing. What we tried to do with the programme was put a sort of varied mix of items within. So not all news, not all medical. So we tried variety and texture to the programme. And I often used to think, well, people can wander off if they don't like one item, they're not interested in it, and they can come back and join in again for a change of item, different something. So we used to try very hard to sort of do amusing items that would make people smile or get them really engaged that way. And I remember we did an item, I don't know how it came up, but the discussion was about all female households and how the husbands or the partners survived with all females in the household, with the bathroom episode, you know, when they were banging on the door in the morning, and teenagers are notorious girls for occupying the bathroom for extended periods of time. I think then having ensuite bathrooms was perhaps not de rigueur as it is now. And we got Chris Patton on the programme, so there was no book to publish, but he just was intrigued by it, and he came to join in the discussion on the programme, which was great.
Jenny must have interviewed countless people over 33 years,
yeah,
both famous and unknown and specialists in their area, including politicians from this country, politicians from America, the famous interview with Hillary Clinton.
So Hillary Clinton was late, delayed by traffic, so you have to change the running order in that case. We happen to have Shirley Williams live as well. I think that phrase, that word live, is really weird, isn't it? But anyway, she was there doing an item about her mother. And we often had her. She was always available, just delightful to have. And she did the interview. And then Hillary Clinton had arrived. And so you have to change guests over as Jenny says goodbye to one and introduces the other. And by mistake, Shirley left her handbag in the studio where she was, you know, to get out quickly. And Hillary Clinton walks in and was sitting in the interviewee's chair, as directed. No speaking, but gestures. And then all of a sudden she picks up this handbag and says to somebody, what shall I do with this type thing, you know, miming. And of course, Jenny just loved moments like that. So she took it and said, oh, Hillary Clinton has just arrived in the studio and she's holding up a handbag. I think it's Shirley Williams's, you know. Those are the sort of moments of broadcasting that just make a programme, actually, because they're spontaneous and they're real.
Yes.
Listeners love those.
Jenny was very much involved in some issues about women's health, the menopause and the HRT, and then she went public when she herself found she had breast cancer.
Yes, yes, and I was editor at that point too. So I was editor with her for 10 of the 33 years. Yes, I remember her ringing me later one afternoon and saying, I've been diagnosed with breast cancer. And of course, things like that have to be handled very carefully. First of all, she wanted to know, could I find out where she should go for treatment? So I put a call through to the major breast cancer charity. I couldn't reveal who it was, but, you know, I'm sure they understood perfectly. Then we had to be quite sensitive to, obviously, what Jenny wanted to do. But right from the start, she was going to make it public, and she duly did. And she went off air and had treatment, and then came back more gradually and was very open about the whole experience. And actually, when we came round to Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is sort of October time, Jenny was very up for it. We decided that we would do a whole month of items on the programme, not the whole programmes, but items dotted in every programme throughout the month on different aspects of living with, being diagnosed with breast cancer. And we got a huge response because the audience was incredibly important to Jenny and very loyal to her. So when we used to do live outside broadcasts, which we did on a regular basis, I don't think there's the finance to do them now, but we used to take programmes all over the place and have audiences, and they would love meeting Jenny. All the listeners came, and we always were guaranteed of a very enthusiastic reception. And it was a real delight to meet people and chat to them who were our regular listeners.
She was very concerned that she wanted to use the experience to help others.
Yep, absolutely. Yes. From that point of view, I think Woman's Hour had always had a pioneering sort of aspect. It's difficult to remember, but years ago, you didn't discuss cancer.
You certainly didn't discuss the menopause or anything like
no,
that.
No, what I call women's plumbing issues were very much swept under the carpet, and people weren't used to talking about their emotional reactions to experiences of life-threatening diagnoses and the trauma and bereavement. It wasn't something that was public. It was something very private that you didn't talk about. And Woman's Hour had always talked about things that weren't usually talked about on air, yes, and been very open. And Jenny championed that too, and particularly with her own breast cancer and her own menopause experience, yes.
And her 33 years would have been a huge transition during that time for the women, how women were perceived in society, because
totally,
you're going back to 87,
mm-hmm,
going to 2020. I mean, there's such a difference
between
the two. Woman's Hour then, Jenny bridged that gap, took it through, and was the ideal person in many ways for those sorts of issues.
Yes, yes. And she had been born and bred with Woman's Hour, as I was. We shared that sort of experience. You know, our earliest memories were doing quarter to two with your mum, listen with mother, and then at 2 o'clock, it was Woman's Hour. And I can remember my mother saying to me, "You be quiet now and sit on my lap, and I'm going to listen to my programme. You've had yours." And Jenny had exactly the same experience. And so we both had heard Marjorie Anderson presenting Woman's Hour as children, and we were reared on that sort of, you know, philosophy, basically, yes.
What would you say were ultimately were the major strengths of Jenny Murray?
I think, I called her the shark, actually, as an interviewer, because if she had a politician or somebody in who she needed to call to account, she was very good at starting very gently with approachable questions that were fairly straightforward, and she would then build up, and like a shark, she would suddenly go in with a question. She was very good at listening. So if people gave her the opening, she'd be right in there with the question absolutely on the nub of it. And she did that with Edwina Curry. She put Edwina Curry on the spot by saying, "And what impact do you think your affair and the way you've written about it will have on John Major's wife, Norma?" And you could hear Edwina just take a breath. And the other thing that Jenny was very good at was being super sensitive with people who found it emotionally very difficult to tell their story, and they weren't used to broadcasting. And Jenny was an enabler as well. Again, she listened really carefully, but she also did it in a logical fashion so that the story unfolded in a way that listeners were caught up with and stayed with the interview. And if something was very moving, we would often get emails or even letters before the days of emails from listeners saying that they had been stopped in their tracks and they had to stop whatever they were doing and they had to listen to the interview. And she was very sensitive like that. She's very good at pacing, and she wasn't afraid of a moment of silence on radio, and she wasn't afraid of people showing their emotion, and she knew how to give them a moment in time so that they could just compose themselves sufficiently to go on. She was a wonderful woman, an icon of broadcasting, and the legend lives on.
Jill, thank you very much.
TNF Soundings.
more than £1 million worth of counterfeit designer goods seized in Smethwick Sandwell Council's trading standards offices, in partnership with West Midlands Police and Brand Protection officers from WRI Group, have seized a large quantity of counterfeit designer goods from a warehouse in Smethwick. The seizure followed an investigation into the use of TikTok to advertise fake products for sale. Items recovered included trainers, watches, scarves, perfumes, and electronic goods, with an estimated value exceeding £1 million. Brands affected included Chanel, Louis Vuitton, Prada, Apple, Canada Goose, Moncler, Rolex, Burberry, Nike, and others. Evidence suggests the goods were imported from China and Hong Kong. Investigations are ongoing to bring the perpetrators to justice. Trading standards warn that counterfeit goods are not victimless, often linked to organized crime and exploitation, including child labor. These items also pose significant safety risks. Councillor Bob Jones, Cabinet Member for Environment and Enforcement, said, "The Council is committed to working with partner organisations to protect consumers and tackle illegal trading. Consumers are urged to avoid buying counterfeit goods as they are often unsafe, poor quality and not covered by consumer protections. Purchasing such items may also contribute to criminal activity. Previous testing has found counterfeit perfumes can contain harmful chemicals, while fake electronics may cause fire hazards, electrical faults, and potential hearing damage. Advice to consumers: buy only from reputable retailers. Be aware of safety risks associated with counterfeit goods. Report concerns to the Citizens Advice Consumer Service online or by calling 0808 223 1133. Trust your instincts. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is." The seizure in Smethwick took place on Wednesday, 13th May.
Now for part two of our visit to the Fixed Wheel Brewery in Blackheath. This is all about how the beer and lager, I think they brew that as well, are decanted, poured into barrels and firkins and all those various sizes of container, and also a bit about the strength of beers that they brew as well.
And then this here on the front is has a different name, but I'm just going to call it a keystone hole for now, and that has a keystone put into it, funnily enough, and this is where you throw the tap through, which is always very fun, especially if it's a very old cask of beer, because it just likes to go everywhere and you have to get the tapping in one hit, so it's always quite a nice gamble. The smaller, yeah, so they're all different sizes, just it goes everywhere, yeah, they're all different sizes of casks, and all of them have quite funny names. How many can I remember now? You've got pins, which is about half the size of that. This is 72 pints, by the way. This is called a firkin. Then you've got a barrel, and then you've got a hogshead, and then you've got another one somewhere. There's loads. I don't know them all. This here is called... This is a handball. Oh, Jesus, I'm covered in... This is a handball. And on the bottom is a beer engine, which basically helps the beer flow up through all the pipes, through a python, where it's cooled. Cask beer is served at sort of 8 to 10 degrees. That's why people sometimes call it warm beer. Keg is typically served... sort of 1-2 degrees, really depends what you're drinking on the keg. Beer engine, what can I tell you about a beer engine? It prevents backflow. It was invented by a Dutch guy who also invented the fire hose. I don't know if that has any relevance, to be honest. This here is called a swan neck, which basically just adds more froth to the beer. Essentially, when you're drinking a beer, the smaller the bubbles on the foam, number one, it looks better, like I say, you drink with your eyes as much as you do with your mouth. But then also those bubbles hold in lots of aroma, and so the smaller the bubbles, the longer lasting that aroma ends up being, and so that's how you keep your pint tasting as good as the first sip all the way down to the bottom of the glass, is how many of them really fine bubbles can you get into the glass. A lot of these, sort of in the early 2000s, a lot of people tried to cheat these by adding in gas and electrics. That got very quickly overturned by the Campaign for Real Ales, because it wasn't real ale beer. And yet, that is about all I can tell you about our brewery and brewing in general. If you've got any questions, go ahead and spit them out.
Well, the most obvious one that occurs to me is, where do you determine the strength of the beer?
Yeah.
In the whole process.
So that is dependent on how much sugar you can extract out of your mash at the very start of the process, but then it also depends on what point you stop the yeast from fermenting, because you can forcibly stop it, but typically you don't want to do that. It depends on what packaging you're going into. So there's also another story about a really big beer recall where they cut the fermentation off too soon. They canned the beer, or they bottled the beer. I can't remember what brewery it was or who it was or anything. And then they stored all that beer in warehouses, where that yeast then sort of woke back up again, started fermenting, and then bang, all them cans and all them bottles and stuff started popping. And so part of like the legislation for canning and stuff is that you'll always store all those cans for at least 2 weeks. That's kind of how you can tell. It's also how you can tell if you've got any leaky seals sort of around the rims of cans or a bottle cap. So it's all about the amount of sugar you can extract from the malt, and then how soon you can cut off the fermentation. Yeah, that's basically it. We measure it in what's called a hydrometer, which I'm not going to grab because they're very delicate and I've broken too many for my boss to be happy with me about it. It's called a hydrometer, and it's basically just a little float that basically measures the density of the beer. And that's how we detect how much sugar it is. It's not the most accurate thing in the world, but it's close enough.
What range of strengths do you brew to?
We
roughly.
We have got some that are 3.5, and the strongest we've ever done was a 14.7% Imperial Russian Stout. It's called Omerta, and it was so nice, so dangerous, but it was absolutely lovely. We've had a couple in between. We've had one called Tomake, which was a Belgian triple. That was 11.9
strengths.
Yeah, pretty close. You can brew barley wines, but they end up being a whole fuss in the fermentation and stuff as well because of how delicate. You end up not adding in that many hops, and the hops add a really big preservative to the beer and make it longer lasting. And so when you're not adding in as many hops, you're sort of really cutting down your shelf life. So, yeah.
Do you tend to get demand for the stronger ones, Christmas or other times of the year?
Stouts are the big ones at Christmas. We like to do different variations of the stout. Actually, in one of the tanks at the minute, we've got a blackberry stout brewing, which is full of blackberry syrup. Don't know how that'll ferment out. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Might leave a really sticky mess that I'll have to climb in and clean. We do, yeah. We just got a syrup. It just costs too much for us to get fresh blackberries. A lot of places do get the fresh fruits and stuff, but it's just not sort of optional for us.
I'll have part three of our visit to the Fixed Wheel next week, and where I asked Jacob, who showed us around, about the history of the brewery and how he got into brewing. In the meantime, a round of thanks to our readers this week. They were James, Debbie, Lauren, Pam, who read Saturday's news, as well as organising all the readers, Jenny and Kate. Thanks to Sue, of course, who chose all the articles from the papers, and to Tony and Gavin doing the copying at the town hall. And don't forget, we are on the internet via your smart speaker. If you give the magic word to the A lady, which I say because I don't like saying the wait word in case those smart speakers start sounding off unprompted. And I know of people who do listen on the A lady. They probably pick up the stream, which is on the internet, and you can go to our webpage to listen to that, or in fact download the podcast. And Sarita very often gets the podcast up and available by Thursday, and often on Friday. and hope Sarita might be doing some reading for it if she's not a very busy mom, but she's a brand new mom. I think she gave birth a few months ago, so she's very busy, obviously. It's worth mentioning, if you haven't discovered by now, that the podcast feed for Samwell Talking News also carries SVI activities. And so you'll have heard, if you subscribe to our podcast, the latest news from SVI about their activities. I think there might be one other up there as well about the talks coming up at the town hall about campaigning and getting involved as a telephone befriending volunteer. I know one of our new listeners preparing to be a phone volunteer. Well, it certainly is a lot cooler now. I'm beginning to put on my waterproof coat going out. At least the scorcher is over for the time being. Maybe it will return in the next month or so. After all, it is the summer. So hope you enjoyed what you could of that, and hope you didn't get sunburned and feel the benefits or the downside of the heat spell. Pity that some people had to make such a mess of Samwell Valley and the other parks, as we heard in the papers. That's it for this week. We'll be with you next week, so take care, and bye-bye from me, Ray, and all the team for this week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.